Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the church to acknowledge that we have brothers and sisters who are gay.
LGBTs have to find a household of worship that reflects what your views are and what you believe.
A gay person who still wants to attend church after the way the church has treated the gay community, I'm telling you, they have more faith than I do. They have more faith than a lot of you.
What's not loving is to look someone in the eye when God says they are in jeopardy of an eternity in hell and merely wink and nod at their sin because you're afraid of being called names.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Can we talk? Certainly. But the question is, should we be talking? This is Wretched Radio. Recently, we have been encouraged to have a conversation about the doctrine of hell. Is it, as has been historically understood, eternal conscious torment, or could it be that God annihilates unbelievers where they no longer experienced consciousness? At some point in their existence in hell, they cease to exist. That would be annihilationism, regularly called conditionalism these days. And there are those who would say, let's chat about it. Let's talk about this doctrine. We can sit down as brothers and simply kind of just hash it out. The question is, can we do that? Certainly. Should we do that? To answer that question, we need to look at a lot of issues, not the least of which would be church history. And this is relevant in this latest push to have a conversation about the eternality of hell, because there are those who would say, historically, this has just been an intra-Orthodox conversation. It's just brothers in the faith just talking about it, working it through, being willing to listen to the other side and consider the arguments. Now, any theologian worth his salt has to consider the arguments, but I believe it is accurate to say that historically, this has never been an intra-Orthodox conversation. It's never been considered that. History reveals that the doctrine of hell is so clear that it is eternal conscious torment. There is no point in having a conversation about it. Furthermore, in the 6th century, there were church councils that actually anathematized annihilationism. Therefore, it is incumbent upon us to engage with church history, always a challenging subject because, well, it can be rather selective, our understanding of church history. It happened to be a long time ago. There are a lot of different historians that talk about it. But I think that we have a clear enough picture regarding the doctrine of hell that we can look back and ultimately conclude this is not a subject that we should be talking about. Now, we can talk about the subject, but should we be just exchanging it as if we were talking about something like eschatology? Just different brothers, different opinions. Let's just talk. Let me take you back to the 3rd century. A theologian, his name is Origen. You perhaps frequently hear him quoted. The church fathers selectively quoted Origen because he was both brilliant and deemed to be downright dangerous. This was a young man. He started leading a school at a very young age. His dad, by the way, was martyred. I believe the year was 202. He was a Christian who was martyred for the faith. Origen was a brilliant man, a lot of influence in Greek world, because he was very influenced by Plato, which is a note worth considering because annihilationists and conditionalists would tell us that those of us who adhere to eternal conscious torment have a Platonic hermeneutic. In other words, we kind of have interpreted the Bible through Plato. I don't think that's a credible claim. I do believe it is, though, an honest claim regarding Origen. His hermeneutic was Platonic. He incorporated Greek thinking into his understanding of theological concepts. Now, Origen even wrote what is deemed to be the first systematic theology textbook. He was a big thinker, but because of his blending of Platonism into his theology, he came up with conclusions that centuries later were deemed heresy. Now, in fairness, we need to understand what Origen said was not quite as strong as what his later followers from the East presented. They took his claims and they extended them. They made them stronger than his original writings. And so there is a debate to this day. Was the council in the 6th century, the councils really, there were three of them, of Constantinople that condemned annihilationism as anathema, was Origen anathematized or the teachings of those who used Origen? Got to be fair, because that is a legitimate understanding, I think, of the councils, their condemnation, and the history of Origen himself. What were Origen's issues that made him controversial, and some would say outside of orthodoxy? Well, this particular issue was about your soul. Did it always exist, or did God create your soul when he made you? This is traducianism versus creationism. Creationism is that God made your soul when he put you together with your body in the womb. Traducianism would say that your soul always existed. Well, Origen held on to the view that your soul always existed. And in the early church, that was deemed to be pretty controversial because it went against the common thinking of the day that God made you when he made you. Second doctrine that made Origen controversial, get your baklava out, apostacostasis. What is that exactly? It's universal restoration. In other words, one day God will actually, in the conquering of evil, he will restore everything and everyone, potentially including the devil and his angels. In other words, God is going to have complete victory. And he's not, therefore, going to let somebody languish in hell for forever. It is worth noting, as we have our conversation about the doctrine of hell, we need to know this. This is why this is a hot potato issue in our time. Universalism and annihilationism regularly go hand in hand. That's instructive for us. It is, in fact, I'm thinking of John Stott, who was, I don't think that he can be used as, here's our shining example of a conditionalist in the modern era. And he was a little bit more tentative than that, but he was absolutely stout in his declaration and denunciation of universalism. But why did he even have to defend his view that he only believes that those who put their faith in Jesus Christ will be saved? It's because the two doctrines of universalism and annihilationism, they really run hand in hand. And so he had to denounce, hey, I don't believe in universalism, but I am sympathetic to this doctrine of conditionalism. Well, going back now to Origen, he also wrestled with this issue, and the danger of his understanding of apostacostasis, that's a mouthful, is that it is actually universalism. Because if people don't remain in hell for forever, they are restored. Well, that points toward ultimately it is not necessary to put your faith in Jesus Christ, because one day God is going to restore everything. All rational beings, including demons, possibly Satan, would ultimately be restored to God. So in other words, punishment, interestingly, in hell, now it's more about restoration than it is punishment. It is more about kind of the holding cell until ultimately God restores them. Sort of like our modern day understanding of what we used to call the penal system. It's no longer about punishment. It's about restoration. There was a third doctrine, subordinational Trinitarianism. Now, This isn't exactly within the scope of our conversation about the doctrine of hell, but it's important to understand that an individual that is called upon from church history to state, historically, there have been church fathers that believed in annihilationism, which is true, but we need to note the absolute exception, as we will see as we continue to study the history of the doctrine of hell. But we do need to understand the individual who is most often cited as a church father annihilationist also had a wonky understanding of Trinitarian theology, which was always debated in probably every one of the church councils. What did he believe? He affirmed the eternality of the Son, but he described the Son as ontologically subordinate to the Father. Uh-oh, that's a problem. Now, we can have a conversation about roles and subordination, no problem. But nature, that Jesus was less than the Father, well, that would historically be considered heresy. Christology and anthropology would be doctrine number four, suggested Christ human and that he preexisted and he was united with the Logos. And you go, I don't understand that. Well, that's because it was metaphysical, which is, again, his Platonic influence shading his theology. In other words, if you're going to cite Origen as your source for annihilationism, we need to understand that source. We'll continue our historical review of the doctrine of hell next on Wretched Radio.
You know what I love about coffee? It's not just the first sip in the morning, though it's pretty great. It's that you can count on it. Every morning, it's there, ready to wake you up and get your day started. And that's exactly what we've built with the Fortis Plus app. It's your daily dose of biblical truth, ready when you are, completely free. Look, you're already reaching for your phone first thing in the morning anyway. Why not make it count? Download Fortis Plus right now and start your day with truth instead of trash. It's free, it's biblical, and it's exactly what you need to stand strong in this brave new world. Fortis Plus at fortisplus.org.
Hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
So here's a question. Who's teaching your son what it means to be a man? Is it TikTok? His football coach? Some guy on a podcast who thinks masculinity means to never apologize? Well, here's the problem. Culture keeps handing men two options. Be a doormat or be a bulldozer. And that's why we created Gentle Man, a brand new video series with Todd Friel and Dr. John Krotz. New episodes are dropping every Monday on Fortis Plus. So download the Fortis Plus app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org. Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at fortisplus.org. Every night at 8 o'clock, the battle begins. Who gets the remote? What are we watching? How many cooking shows is too many cooking shows? Well, I've got news that'll bring peace to your living room. Fortis Plus just landed on your TV. Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, even that smart TV you bought last year, and you still can't program. No subscription, no credit card. Download Fortis Plus on your TV right now. Finally, something the whole family can agree on. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Ever feel like you're watching the world turn upside down and wondering if everyone else is seeing the same thing you are? Yeah, you're not alone. And in Fortis Institute, we're not just watching from the sidelines. We're fighting back with truth. But here's the thing. That mission, well, it takes resources. And that's where faithful gospel partners come in. The church needs more than just encouragement right now. It needs equipping. Will you stand with us? Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Know your church fathers.
Athanasius was the Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century. He was a champion of the Church's fight against Arianism and was a chief author of the Nicene Creed. However, his orthodoxy did not equal popularity. Athanasius was exiled no less than 5 times, but Athanasius chose to honor God instead of men.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it time to have a talk? Yeah, I think so. This is Wretched Radio. We're being encouraged to talk about the doctrine of hell, to have a conversation amongst brothers about whether or not hell is eternal conscious torment, or if at some point God ends the existence of those who do not believe in Jesus Christ, who find themselves condemned to hell. We're being encouraged to talk about it, and I'm game for talking about it, but I do believe that we need to recognize what kind of conversation we should be having. This has historically not been considered an intra-Orthodox conversation. The doctrine of annihilationism has always been denounced. It's always been on the fringes. Most regularly, that doctrine has been adopted by cults, Jehovah's Witnesses, Socinians, and those on the fringes of Christianity. It has never been esteemed to be a conversation that is worth having, because the doctrine itself has always been considered heterodox. Should we be sitting down to just kind of open it up and discuss it as if we come to a disagreement, no big whoop? Well, according to early church history, it was a big whoop, because it was indeed an issue that was discussed in the early church. And the early church made some decisions about this doctrine. And while we are not Roman Catholic, we do not rely on church tradition, because they can be fallible also. We understand that about the early church. But we can't ignore it either. We can't just say, well, those guys were knuckleheads, and now we moderns have a better understanding of this doctrine. And so it is, we're being encouraged to look back at those in the early church who affirmed annihilationism. Were there any who did? Yeah. An absolute minority. Origen, brilliant theologian, was one of them. But we need to understand, Origen had a lot of theological musings that are extremely problematic. Not the least of which would be his understanding of the nature of Jesus. That is a monster issue. Finally, Origen, he believed that your soul and your body, the way that you're going to be ultimately spending eternity, it was a little different for Origen. He argued that the resurrection body would be spiritualized and not materially identical to the present body. I share all of this so that we can understand Origen when he is being called upon to support the doctrine of annihilationism today. Was he a heretic? Or was it his teachings that were extended by his later followers? Were those heretical as determined by councils, plural, in the 6th century? Let me take you there to the councils of Constantinople. These happened throughout. There were a few years separating these councils. They happened a few years throughout. But in 536, the main conversation at the Synod of Constantinople was really about the nature of Jesus. That was the big issue. Monophysitism versus the Chalcedonian understanding of the nature of Jesus. That was the biggie. But it was the second council that took place, 543. The principal purpose was to condemn the teachings of Origen. That was it. That's why they got together. Now, please note, it was Eastern monks in around Israel that kind of liked Origen's teachings, and they made them more than what Origen originally said. Regardless, that was the purpose of the meeting, to get together to condemn Origen's theology and teachings. And this took place in 543. This was about whether or not there's universal restoration. In other words, will everybody one day be restored to God? That's universalism, which included, of course, the doctrine of the eternality of hell. The conclusions of that council were later ratified by, you guessed it, another Council of Constantinople in 553. What did they say about the doctrine of annihilationism? What did they say about the doctrine that we today mostly call conditionalism? They reaffirmed a precise interpretation of Chalcedonian doctrine, in other words, the natures of Jesus Christ, but they also reaffirmed the condemnation of doctrinal positions that were addressed at the 543 Synod regarding Origen. This is what they said. This is the longer Greek version regarding annihilationism. If anyone says or holds that the punishment of demons and of impious men is only temporary, that's annihilationism, and that it will have an end at some time, or that there will be a restoration of demons or of impious men, or that souls existed beforehand, that's Origen's teaching of traducianism, and were united to bodies because of previous sins. So for all of those issues that were Origen's theology, let him be anathema. Let him be anathema. Now, as I stand here, do I believe that anybody who affirms the doctrine of annihilationism is automatically a heretic? I don't. But that doesn't mean this issue is a secondary issue. There's levels of theologies. You've got essential cardinal doctrines. This is the stuff you got to get right, or you are anathema. There are secondary issues, and I'm putting a space between cardinal and secondary. Why? Because I think that there's a level of theology between secondary and primary. Heterodoxy. Because a secondary issue does not make its way into a primary issue. So for instance, eschatology, if you're a post-mill preacher, whatever it is, it doesn't affect the character and the nature of Jesus. It doesn't affect Trinitarian theology. It's an order of events issue. So it can be considered secondary. It's really important, but it's secondary. But an issue that makes its way into potentially compromising the character and the nature of God is not considered a secondary issue. It's considered heterodoxy if it compromises the nature of God. And how does annihilationism do that? It downplays the severity of sin because it lacks an understanding of the infinite goodness of God. And so, I can't say you're a heretic if you believe in annihilationism. You could be, depending on how far you go. If it goes into universalism, which is always the danger of annihilationism. But if you just are adhering to, I think someday you get snuffed out. I don't know that I would affirm what they said at these ecumenical councils, but that's not to downplay the danger of this doctrine. It has massive implications. Why go share the gospel? Why be a missionary if one day everybody's going to be restored anyway, or even if it's just they get annihilated, they get completely removed from reality? I think a lot of unbelievers would go, that's fine by me. I wouldn't want to live with a God like that anyway. We also need to understand that this doctrine wasn't just condemned in the early church councils that took place. The synods that were meeting throughout church history, they either condemned annihilationism or they simply strongly affirmed ECT, eternal conscious torment. There was also the Athanasian Creed of the 4th century. You remember the Athanasian Creed about the nature of Jesus Christ? All those at whose coming all men shall rise again with their bodies and shall give account for their own works. And they that have done good shall go into life everlasting. This is Matthew 25. and they that have done evil into everlasting fire. They didn't condemn annihilationism. They affirmed ECT. And that, by the way, took place also throughout church history. The Fourth Lateran Council of 1215, 1274, the Second Council of Lyon, all affirming what the overwhelming majority of church affirmed for centuries, and that is hell is eternal conscious torment. Can we have a conversation about it? Yes. But I don't believe it should just be a chat as if it's a secondary issue. We're going to talk about it. We're going to do it the way the early church did it, the way that the Middle Ages church and the Reformation church did it. We'll debate it. Debate it. Because the implications of this doctrine, they are not secondary. This is a matter of heterodoxy. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.